Work on the summit tunnel went slowly at best. Montague decided it would be worth the cost to sink a shaft from the top so that the Chinese could work on four facings at once, the ones at each end and two others going in opposite directions from the middle. At the tunnels, especially Summit Tunnel, the Chinese were using great amounts of black powder, up to 500 kegs a day. Crocker and Strobridge decided to experiment with nitroglycerin, which was brand new. The CP found that when they got to drilling holes of 15 to 18 inches into the granite, poured in the liquid nitroglycerin, capped the hole with a plug, and fired it with a percussion cap, the nitroglycerin did a far better job than powder. The work progressed at nearly double the speed, and the granite was broken into far smaller pieces. But the accidents proved too much. In one, after a number of charges had been set off simultaneously, a Chinese worker hit a charge of nitro that hadn't exploded with his pick. It exploded and killed him and the others working near that spot. Strobridge declared, "Bury that stuff." Crocker said to get it out of there. And even though Nobel perfected dynamite in 1866, it was never tested or used by the CP. In 1867, the CP ignored the dangers and did make use of its own nitroglycerin, but except at Summit Tunnel, it did not make a practice of it. The CP would not wait for the Summit Tunnel to be cut and tracks laid through it. The company would push on beyond the Sierra Nevada by outflanking the Donner Pass. Partly, this was to keep the enormous workforce employed, but mainly it was to get into Nevada and head east before the UP could get to the Salt Lake and head west. The Big Four had not set up the race in order to lose it. The CP sent three exploring parties prodding through Nevada to look for routes for the railroad between the big bend of the Truckee River, some 30 miles east of today's Reno, and the Salt Lake Valley, 500 miles beyond. East of Reno, according to one observer, desolation began to assume its most repulsive form, miles on miles of black igneous rock and volcanic detritus. Outcrops of lava interspersed with volcanic grit were the main features. Another traveler said that the country was so destitute of vegetable and animal life as not to rise to the rank even of a howling wilderness. There was no water. The desert was filled with the bones of thousands of animals who had not made it to California. The second route, to the north of the Humboldt River, was just as bad. Samuel Bowles, who had just crossed the continent, declared that the Humboldt route would be more easily built than going across central Nevada. It goes through a naturally better country as to wood, water, and fertility of soil. It is generally conceded to be the true natural roadway across the continent. The emigration has always taken it. He had it right. Even today, the Humboldt is, as it was for Charlie Crocker and his group in 1850, a narrow but wonderful oasis. The grass is green and high, the ducks, geese, herons, and eagles, the grazing horses and cattle are numerous. So are the deer. The water is clear and plentiful until the river gets to the sinks where the grass grows in great meadows, but the river sinks into the earth. Butler Ives led the exploration of the Humboldt Valley for the CP. When he got to the Humboldt Wells, where the river rises in northeastern Utah out of the East Humboldt Range at the northern edge of the Ruby Mountains, he tried two approaches to Salt Lake City. One angled southeastward, across the Great American Desert and around the bottom of Salt Lake to the city. No good. Then he returned to the wells and set off on a northeasterly direction, across the top edge of the desert, across the Promontory Mountains, around the north shore of the Great Salt Lake, across Bear River, and then southward along the western base of the Wasatch Range to Weber Canyon. That was the way to go.